Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Ben Swanson with you, as always, and Andrew Mason.
Not as always, but usually.
Usually. This week was looking like a very healthy beginning to prepare for the upcoming season. Very exciting to get back to OTAs. And on Thursday, on day two, we found out that Ryan Clady, four-time Pro Bowler, two-time first-team All-Pro, had suffered a left ACL tear during the first practice on Wednesday. Just a crushing blow, like, not only for the offense and on the field, but for Clady, who's been nagged by some injuries in past years, this has to just be a pretty terrible blow for himself, especially coming back to an offense that he was really drafted for.
Yeah, back in 2008, Rick Dennison was still on the staff. Then, of course, Gary Kubiak was in Houston as the head coach. But Mike Shanahan was still the Broncos head coach, and it was a zone-blocking intensive line scheme similar to what the Broncos are running today. It was certainly what he was drafted and built to excel in. And also, for a guy coming off of a really rough two-season stretch, he missed, of course, 14 regular season games in 2013 because of the Lisfranc injury, and then really wasn't the same for much of 2014. And, he admitted to me at the Pro Bowl back in January that, he was basically still dealing with pain and discomfort in the foot until the end of the 2014 season. That's the nature of Lisfranc injuries, is that you have that kind of protracted recovery time. So he was counting on this offseason to get him back to close to where he was before, and devastating for him. You pile that on the patella tendon PCL injury of 2010, which didn't cost him any games, but he struggled that year playing through the recovery of that. He had off-season shoulder surgery a couple of years later. He had the foot injury, and now the ACL. I mean, it's just a real tough go of it for Ryan Clady at this point. And, down the line, you're going to wonder, can he bounce back from all of that? What is he going to be when he comes back? But in the short term, the Broncos have to find answers at left tackle. The first choice appears to be Tyson Brailo, second-round pick, putting him at left tackle for OTAs and seeing what he can do. You've got Chris Clark as a nice insurance policy because he's, delivered incredible work as a starting left tackle back in 2013.
Right.
And they signed Ryan Harris on Friday. He has a couple of starts at left tackle. Most of his experience is on the right side. And then Michael Schofield seen some work at left tackle during OTAs. In fact, it was Schofield that filled in for Ryan Clady when he went down on Wednesday. But still, what this has done is it's taken another offensive line position and put it into flux. And now, really, four of the five offensive line positions are unsettled. You were counting on Ryan Clady and then, of course, Luis Vasquez at right guard to be the pillars around which the offensive line was going to be built and provide stability. Now you've only got Vasquez. So, the storyline of the summer is going to be what happens up front. And we may not know who the quintet that's starting week one will be until shortly before week one, because as Rick Dennison said on Thursday, he expects the competition to continue into training camp in the preseason, and in fact that he hopes it does, in part because so much of what they want to learn about the offensive linemen is going to come from game experience, working in the preseason, working together, finding that cohesion.
We've talked about in previous podcasts, we've written about it, how much expectations are going to be on the young players, especially in the offensive line. And Coach Kubiak spoke on Thursday after the news of the injury broke, and he said about Sam Brailo, we're expecting him and other guys to develop, faster, accelerate their development. He's not a rookie. Like, we're going to hope he kind of becomes almost like a fourth-year guy.
Yeah, you get the sense that
they're
asking him to be what maybe they hoped he would be in a couple of years, that, given the structure of Clady's contract, and his injury history that maybe for the long term they were looking at Tyson Brailo being the left tackle, say, in 2017, well, and being the right tackle in the near term. Well, that has obviously been accelerated. Mm-hmm. The reason why you put Sam Brailo out there now is you want to find out what he can do. You know, at this point, you're in a relatively consequence-free environment as far as low contact. You know, if Sam Brailo is playing left tackle and he gets beat by DeMarcus Ware, he gets beat by Von Miller, well, they can't hit Peyton Manning anyway, so he's not going to get hurt. You know, get beat in the regular season, obviously, it's potentially a different story.
So, I guess, all things considered, when you have like this kind of devastating injury for an offensive line, having it this early kind of, I don't want to say it helps, because obviously it's a huge, huge, detriment to the offensive line's talent.
But any injury, the earlier it happens, the more time you have to prepare.
Adjust for it.
And implement a contingency plan. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Sam Brailo, the more time you have to put him out there with the ones and see if he can get that cohesion with the rest of the linemen, see if he can, find that common ground in terms of communication with Peyton Manning. Same thing at left guard, obviously not with the injury situation, but why you'd put Ben Garland at left guard instead of Shelly Smith. Shelly Smith's a veteran. You know what he is. You know, Chris Clark at left tackle, you know that you can put him in, you can plug him in, he can play there if the need arises. But Sam Brailo, you don't know what he can be. You assume that he has a higher ceiling. So why not put him out there now and see if that potential can be harnessed? Why not put Ben Garland out there at left guard right now and see if his athleticism and his intelligence will translate into, you know, being effective on the offensive line, even though he's only just over 2 years removed from transitioning from the defensive line. This is the time to find out whether those guys can do it. And frankly, you know, if Garland and Sembrello do well over the next few weeks and do well in training camp, you might have found the left flank of the offensive line for the next several years. Certainly, both of them have the upside. You know, Sembrello obviously has more experience coming from CSU, but they both, you know, are quick, athletic, intelligent. They check off most of the items on the checklist that you want to see in zone blocking offensive linemen. And now, in OTAs, you get to find out, can they potentially handle that role as soon as this year?
We've been learning a lot about what the new look of the Broncos is going to be. They're already put in some of the basic steps in previous practices, but with the off-season team activities, the OTAs.
Organized.
Huh? Organized team activities.
Everything from mid-April on is off-season. You know, it is considered the part of the off-season program, you know, phase one, phase two, phase three, et cetera. The organized team activities begin with phase three, and that's what began this week. And the reason why, what separates OTAs from the rest of the off-season work is this is the point where you can work 11-on-11 with helmets on. That's why this week is a key demarcation point in the off-season.
And one of the things that Gary Kubiak talked about, things we saw at practice, open practice for media, is that Peyton Manning working a lot under center. Not only because they're going to be doing that a fair amount, but because they already know what he can do, stepping back.
Same thing as the offensive line. Use this time right now to find out what people can do. Use this time to work to shore up weak points. You know, something that Kubiak mentioned on Thursday that was interesting is that he's going to hold out some starters from OTAs from time to time. So, you know, we're all going to be out there for the OTA that's open to the media next week, and I'm sure there'll be some breathless information of, oh, so and so did all this, and so and so was, you know, on, you know, this other player who's a starter was on the sideline. But that's the nature of OTAs. Again, they're going to use this to find out what sort of hand they're dealt with a lot of players. You look at the offensive line. Inside linebacker is another key spot because Danny Trevathan and Brandon Marshall are still working back from injuries, so you get a chance to learn more about Amin Barrow, Corey Nelson, Steven Johnson, and Todd Davis. You'd certainly say that Johnson and Davis have the inside track to be the guys right behind Marshall and Trevathan because they have starting experience. You know, Davis got, of course, at the end of the year, and Johnson started middle linebacker second half of the season. I know they're very high on Davis, especially, and his potential, but you know, it's a good opportunity for them to get some more work with the first team, and for Wade Phillips to see firsthand what those guys can do, and it's, you know, and also see what kind of depth he has. You know, you've got Reggie Walker, they brought him from San Diego, but again, he's another known commodity, whereas they're still learning about the younger guys.
Now, you had a chance to talk to Brandon Marshall, is that correct, after practice on Wednesday?
I did, yes.
How far is he along in his rehab? I think you said that he's been running?
He's not running yet.
Not running yet.
He expected to be cleared for running in the next several days.
Okay.
He is lifting with his teammates. That was a big deal for him. He doesn't feel any pain in his foot. The surgery that he had two screws put in his foot to stabilize it, and he expects that in the next off season, 2016, he expects those screws will be removed then. But you know, it stabilizes the foot, kind of helps speed along the healing process. But he said he feels good. He feels like he's going to be ready for training camp, and obviously, you know, if he can start running here in the next, even say 7 to 10 days, that would give him, you know, about 7 or 8 weeks, 7.5, 8 weeks to be ready for training camp. You would think that would be enough, and I assume that even if he was clear for training camp, they'd bring him along slowly, kind of, you know, ease him into full work. Danny Trevathan is definitely ahead of Brandon Marshall in his recovery at this point, but on Wednesday at OTAs, they were both in the same place, standing on the sideline watching Shane Ray, who had his helmet and, you know, and was a part of a couple of individual periods early in practice. He's still a little bit away from being cleared, but he's expected to be back in the next few weeks. So
yeah, I was able to talk to him after practice, and they're being pretty patient with him, as obviously you would.
You can afford to be patient when you've got Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware.
Right.
It's you know, there's not the pressure on him to start and get repetitions. So that
he's taking mental reps. He says, yes. So even though he's not getting the physical work in, he's still taking a lot of preparation.
Players love that term.
Mental reps.
Mental reps. There is value to it, but at the same time, even Brandon Marshall said on Wednesday, it's not the same.
Yeah.
He's like, it's a new defense. I want to show the new Reggie Herring and Wade Phillips what I can do. It's not the same. they all know that.
So Ray said that he didn't really put any timetable on it. He was like, well, I could be back as soon as the end of the week, or we could be, you know, taking it, weeks at a time or days at a time towards, next week, something like that. So really they're just going to, you know, take it day by day, as the sports cliche goes.
Day by day.
What is that from?
Oh man.
Day by day.
I don't know that one. I do.
Wet Hot American Summer.
That's right. Yeah. I do remember.
That's the like the stand-up guy they bring in. Is like, oh, this is the classic day by day.
See, what I recall is, in the night, it was day to day. I'm not, was it?
Day
by
day.
I think it was Dan Patrick or Charlie
day
Steiner on ESPN would say day to day, but then again, aren't real. every time the phrase day to day came up in came up on the show. But the other thing with Shane Ray is that, you know, getting through this without having to have surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously the ideal situation if you can get through without surgery, but that also means that they're going to be cautious because you don't want to put him in a position where he would have to have surgery, and if he did, you know, that would probably scuttle a good chunk of his rookie season. You might be talking about surgery forcing him onto a callable injured reserve. So I think they're going to be careful. We may not see the full Shane Ray until training camp, and that's okay.
Interesting thing from Kubiak's first press conference on Wednesday. He was asked about the progress of the defense versus the progress of the offense. You know, not in competition or anything, but he said that he thinks the defense is a little bit further along, and you know, they're both going through scheme changes, like complete overhauls almost. And he said the defense probably coming along quicker, just because they have a little bit more of a base having worked in some 3-4 elements in the past.
Also, the simplicity of the scheme. It's certainly it's very player friendly in terms of what you have to learn, and it's pretty typical at this time and even in a training camp for defense to be ahead of the offense. In part because defense, you know, you're attacking, but it's also reactive. You know, it's a counter move to what the offense presents. You know, in terms of the formation, in terms of what they're doing from snap to snap. So it doesn't surprise me that the defense is ahead. What I think will be interesting to watch is as we get into the preseason games and then the practices against the 49ers as well, and then the regular season, will the defense continue to be ahead of the offense? I think now, because of all the changes on the offensive line, it would that the defense probably will congeal first before the offense does. I mean, I could even see some games early in the season that have some very un-Bronco-like scores, at least relative to the last 3 years. There may be
more like the ones before that.
Yeah, the Tim Tebow era, perhaps.
10-7.
There may be some 13-10, 17-10 games, but I would also expect the Broncos to be in very good position to win those games because, you know, you have an electrifying
passing attack. You have two top wide receivers, both Pro Bowlers, Peyton Manning.
That will certainly help, but at the same time, you're going to have to maybe do a little bit more to protect Peyton Manning with the new offensive line. This may mean more two tight end schemes. It may even mean some 22 type personnel. You may see two backs and two tight ends at times, and one of those backs that could be James Casey, the tight end slash fullback. It will be interesting to see what the Broncos do, you know, to account for the changes on the offensive line and perhaps needing to give the guys on the outside a little bit of help from time to time. It may dial down the offense just a little bit out of the blocks until the offensive line finds its cohesion and finds its footing. But again, like you say, there is Peyton Manning, you know, and there are two Pro Bowl receivers, but at the same time, there's Pro Bowlers all over the defense as well. You know, Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware, T.J. Ward, Chris Harris Jr., Keep Tlaib. And then when you get Trevathan and Marshall back, you got your two leading tacklers from each of the last two seasons back on the defense. You know, in terms of talent and with Wade Phillips and how proven he is, and in terms of scheming from game to game and putting together some great green game plans on the defensive side, it may well be that the defense is ahead of the offense going into the regular season. You know, it'll be different, but I think the defense, looking at the talent it has, is up to it.
I want to go to a little fun segment right here. So before OTAs got started on Tuesday, day after Memorial Day, day before OTAs, the team went on a golf outing. You know, kind of ease tensions. You know, kind of relax, get some teammate bonding going on. How would you fare?
Terribly.
So
we're gonna find out how badly I fare when I go down to Kiawah Island in a few weeks in South Carolina and try my luck at a course that once hosted the Ryder Cup.
That will probably be difficult.
Maybe I should periscope some of that round, let people see how bad I am. They're all at the team golf outing. Obviously, there's all sorts of skill levels out there. You know, Peyton Manning's probably on the high end, and then there's a bunch of guys.
He was pretty good. I've heard.
Well, he'll play in the celebrity tournament, like in July. I think he's played in that. John Elway often plays in that tournament.
The specialists were pretty good.
Not surprising.
Britain, I've heard, is pretty good at golf, and I think I just heard that Brandon McManus is, I think, interning with the USGA. I thought that was kind of interesting. So
back in New Jersey, I would imagine.
I think around here.
Around here, okay, because I know that they've got a big.
I think
office
on the weekends
east.
He might be helping out at some of the tournaments or something.
Oh wow!
So that could be interesting. But yes, a lot of them were.
Wonder if he's working
great.
The Open in a few weeks out of that.
I'm not sure.
Good question.
Be a good question for him.
Volunteering at the Open, perhaps.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I went to go cover it just for photos. And that course, I can't imagine how many balls got lost. There was just like a bunch of like native brush. And so you hit your ball like 20 feet the wrong way, you know, that's it. You lose one. And there are a finite number of golf balls in this world. And many of them were probably lost on Tuesday.
Yeah, doesn't really surprise me.
I'm sure they all got a kick out of it.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's probably harder to go get them from the brush. Like, if you hit them into a water hazard.
Oh, you don't even go for it.
Water hazard down in Florida, you don't go for them, but they have machines that kind of, you know.
We used to have, like,
comb the bottom of the lake and, or the pond or whatever body of water you had, snatch them up, and then they become your range balls.
Well, the other thing is that in Florida, you got gator danger. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but, like, uncle saw a gator on a course he was playing at over near, like, St. Augustine kind of area.
Yeah, my parents live on a pond. Sometimes the gators come out of the pond and sun themselves in the backyard.
It's almost like Happy Gilmore, but yeah, I don't recommend going after them.
Yeah. The one-eyed alligator. Got Chubbs Peterson's hand.
No alligators.
Wrecked his pro career.
No alligators in Colorado.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not this time. there may have been long ago when Colorado was a rainforest back in the days of the dinosaurs. There's an exhibit about this at DIA, like shows what the vegetation of Colorado looked like millions of years ago.
So I did, back when I worked at SB Nation, there was a time when there was like a report that the Toronto Raptors were thinking about changing their names. And the Raptors name has been like a source of contention for fans for a while because they were named in like, was it 95? Something like.
Well, they started in 95. I think they were named in late 93, the same year as, of course,
exactly,
Jurassic Park, when dinosaurs were cool and velociraptors were, you know, some of the big villains of the movie.
So along with humans. The complaint is that it's a relic of its time, and that it was a pop thing and like a culture thing, and it should be done away with. Personally, dinosaurs are cool, and so I did this article where I was like, well, instead of getting rid of the last dinosaur name, we should make dinosaur names for everyone. And so I went through the entire NBA, and I did research going through each state, what dinosaurs lived in which states. And so I gave each team an appropriate dinosaur or prehistoric animal. And then I did Microsoft paints for all of them. And some of the paints are better than the others. And so I had to go through, and like states like Michigan and Ohio, those were completely underwater back then. So those, like, that was where I kind of like, oh, I can't do dinosaurs for these guys. I've got to do like some kind of underwater creature. I think Ohio's for Cleveland, it was something called like the Dunkleosteus, which was a very fitting name for a basketball team. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a big fish, though.
Be interesting to do that with the NFL. What would you start with the Broncos? I mean, on the
Who
one
did I
hand,
give the Nuggets.
Yeah.
That's what I got to look up.
See, if you're also thinking of like the mascot itself, I mean, the like the Bronco horse is an herbivore, right?
The what?
A horse only, you know, doesn't eat meat.
Right.
So you'd want a dinosaur that was an herbivore, like a brontosaurus. The Denver Brontosaurus is instead of the Denver Broncos.
Let's see what I picked here. Oh yeah, I gave him the Stegosaurus. That's That's herbivore, I think.
Is Stegosaurus, is that the proper plural?
Stegosauri? I don't know.
Stegosauri. We need more dot I plurals.
I'm pretty proud of this drawing, though.
No, I think it's grammatically correct. I just wish we had more dot I plurals.
See, some of these are good.
The Alamosauruses?
Yes.
San Antonio?
San Antonio has an Alamosaurus.
Oh.
One of the funnier ones.
I didn't know there was an Alamosaurus. That's awesome.
So one of the ones I found was a lizard, and this was in like Philadelphia or something, so it was for the 76ers. And they found this fossil underneath a FedEx, like And so they just named it the Fedexia or something like that.
Well, I mean, we've got a team here in town, of course, the Colorado Rockies, whose mascot is a dinosaur because
it's a Stegosaurus, is it not? No. It's got the big frills.
It's what got the big frills.
Triceratops, something like that.
Yeah, and of course, well, I don't know of any dinosaurs that had multicolored spots on that big frill.
I don't know if you saw Ben Hockman's article a while back about how much he hates the mascot.
He doesn't have kids. I admit, I
like it all right.
I'm the only problem I have with Dinger is that little thing that he does in the ninth inning where he stands behind home plate and gestures and all that. I mean, people around baseball mock that. That's just stupid. But now that I have a kid who, at the last Rockies game I went to, every time Dinger came out in the field, she'd say, there's Dinger. Now I'm like, okay, I get it now. That's the thing. I think you can kind of go through the ironic... Dinger is dumb phase, and then maybe when you're taking a kid to a game and the kid is pointing out Dinger and waving to Dinger from the stands, and then you're kind of okay with it.
Now I think there's like a divide, I guess, for people who enjoy mascots or hate mascots, and like one half is you want your mascot to be cute and funny and kind of goofy, and the other half is we want our mascot to be like aggressive and kind of like scary and like the old Pelicans mascot.
Yeah, the problem is I'm in the camp that says, first and foremost, you want a mascot that does not scare children.
Yes, of course. I want it to be goofy.
Yeah, goofy and funny. You know, obviously the Broncos have had Miles, the horse, for the last 14 seasons, now going on to 15 because Miles came into being with Sports Authority Field at Mile High back in 2001. But back in the 80s, the NFL tried this thing with the huddles. Are you familiar with these?
I'm familiar with the mascot.
Okay, the mask, every team like had, it's, you know, whether, you know, for the Broncos it was a horse, and they put this, it was oversized, they were all oversized, they looked like they could, you know, barely run 10 yards with a big oversized helmet. And they were designed by NFL Properties, so they all kind of looked the same. Some of them, it was absurd, like, the Jets was literally like a cartoon plane, and they put a helmet on the front of the plane, and that was kind of ridiculous.
Well, I like ridiculous mascots, yeah, though.
The Broncos had a horse.
Just named Huddles, wasn't it?
They were just called the Huddles. I don't think that they ever had a name for any of them. And I remember the one in Tampa.
See, I like this one. I like the Jets mascot here.
I think actually it may have had any. I think that may have been called Jumbo Jet.
But yes, the Broncos mascot, the Huddle mascot, has a connection to modern Denver history, mm-hmm, and politics.
Yes.
The mayor, whose name Michael Hancock, was Huddle mascot.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. That's amazing. That's actually my...
They called him Bucky Bronco.
Bucky Bronco, okay.
So that would mean he had the same name as the statue, of course, that on top of the scoreboard.
Yes.
There's actually a website I found.
These worst
NFL huddles.
Look like the air mascots, you know, the ones that, like, fill up with air, mm-hmm, and they bounce around, and then they, like, eat a fan, or they eat, like, a cheerleader or something.
They cite Bucky Bronco as one of the worst Huddles mascots, but they say, but here's the explanation. There's really nothing wrong with Bucky here. He's a cute horse. What's not to love? Well, the problem is more in the fact of the laziness of the Huddles designers. Look at Bucky alongside the other horse in the group, Cody Cole.
Yeah,
they're
the
pretty
Colts
much
one
the exact same.
Yeah.
Change the color.
Okay, yeah. This Rams one's pretty cool. The Rams helmet, which is obviously with the horns curling around.
Still one of the best helmets ever created.
Yes, and one of the first.
Yeah.
I think it was the first that actually had
There's a Bronco connection to that.
Yes.
Fred Gehrke.
He designed it.
Longtime general manager designed it. Yeah, designed it when he was out in L.A. He was an art student, I believe,
mm-hmm,
in college.
And so this Rams mascot, the horns came out of the helmet.
Mm-hmm. And on the Bucks one that I saw on every other week in Tampa when I was a kid, going to all the Bucs games, the feather that was on the old Bucko Bruce logo, they actually had a big feather, a big red feather sticking out of the helmet. And so this corpulent mustachioed fellow in a, and by the way, they had two-bar face masks, which just makes them even more awesome. The classic two-bar face mask. Although on the Bucky Bronco one, the helmet and the face mask didn't come all the way over his mouth, so the face mask is sitting on his nose, basically.
Oh, here it is. The Bucks one. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
See, I'm definitely in that camp where mascots are better ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Ridiculously, like, I don't know. This almost looks like some kind of 80s, like, just ground in the 80s design where it's like, what was the, like, the dolls that were really big in the 80s, like Cabbage Patch.
Cabbage Patch dolls.
Yeah.
Garbage Pail Kids cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And like of today's mascots, the Panthers weren't, like, Carolina Panthers didn't start till 1995. They didn't have the huddle. I like Serper, even though Serper, Jackson DeVille, again, these are, you know, they're cuddly, so they're big, and, you know, they look like they, you know, couldn't dodge a vacuum cleaner coming down the hallway.
Now, what I like, so obviously from being from Charlotte, I'm biased, but Hugo the Hornet and Serper are a great duo for,
yes, they
for
are
two major sports.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that in the mascot universe, the NBA is considered at the top of the pyramid, not the NFL, not Major League Baseball.
The Phoenix Suns gorilla is infamous and famous.
Well, and the other thing is, look at all the stuff those mascots are asked to do in the NBA. Like you mentioned, the gorilla dunk. There's a, you know, there's some athleticism involved. We know about Rocky here with the Nuggets, mm-hmm. and you know, part of his shtick is
I miss the Sonic,
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a great mascot. The Thunder's when
the Sonics
okay
when the Sonics come back, that I think Sasquatch will come back. He better.
Eventually, yeah.
Does Orlando still have Stuff the Magic Dragon?
Yes, that is a weird. That was the same people designed the Philly
Fanatic. Yep.
Yeah. So obviously that kind of works, and on the other end, it's kind of weird for the Magic. I mean, I guess it's like a dragon or something.
Well,
but
again, I mean, it was the whole Magic theme, Magic Dragon.
Right.
That's hey, Puff the Magic Stuff Dragon the, stuff. Yeah. Well, then you've got your mascot, and how do you personify magic? That's the problem. That's
a wizard, but then I don't think. Yeah, the bullets weren't the wizards at that point, so you still have that.
You could have still done that, but you know, Stuff was kind of colorful. The Tampa Bay Lightning have had a mascot over the years called Thunderbug, as in like a lightning bug.
Oh,
but for a period in the 90s, they gave Thunderbug a companion called Ladybug.
Oh.
That was basically a ladybug.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, man.
You know,
the Avalanche have a dog right now, right?
Yes, it's a St. Bernard.
All right.
Like a,
I haven't
a
done the research.
Dog.
What is the connection of a St. Bernard to
Avalanche? Oh, come on. You've seen like cartoons where there's an avalanche or something, and then the St. Bernard comes along with the thing, and he's just kind of dopey, and he digs in the ground, and he digs them up or something.
I missed all that. I mean, I get the St. Bernard for the New Orleans Saints, not only because of Saints, but you know, back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, there was an actual live St. Bernard on the Saints sideline called Gumbo. Now the name of their, you know, man in the suit mascot is Gumbo.
So this image we're looking at of St. Bernard,
okay,
it comes from TVTropes.org. So
okay,
I guess it's more of a TV kind of archetype where the St. Bernard is.
I guess
the Swiss mountains, and it's got
I never made that connection. The last time I was at an Avalanche game, my wife and I were trying to figure out why would a St. Bernard represent the Avalanche. It just seemed, you know, very, very strange.
I think there used to be a different mascot. It was a it was a Yeti. Yeah. Yeah, there used to be a Yeti. I think maybe the St. Bernard is a little bit cuddlier for kids.
Yeah. What was the name?
Going back to a Carolina connection, the Hurricanes.
Howler. Howler the Yeti.
Oh, there you go.
And yeah, and I'm looking at some images of Howler. Yeah, he would have frightened small children.
So Carolina Hurricanes mascot is a pig.
Yeah, the ice hog, right?
I don't really get it, but on the
hog
other,
farming, North Carolina.
Yes. Yeah, I figured it maybe
especially
like,
when you're getting toward eastern North Carolina and Raleigh's kind of, you know,
Raleigh's where, the where edge where you
where eastern North Carolina mm-hmm. kind of starts.
Very
I know
rural agriculture. Yeah.
A lot of my family lives and farms about 25 miles north of Raleigh in Wake County, and yeah, even though they're not hog farmers, I got that.
Yeah, I didn't really get it. I was like, okay, well, because it's a hurricane, how are you going to do a hurricane?
Yeah, that's a good question, because a long time ago I did some work for the Tampa Bay Storm Arena football team, and let's see, they went through this. They went through several mascots. They went for a while. They had this this mammoth thing that was like a cyclops, because it, one eye of the storm. Then the guy took away the uniform. Like he quit. He quit over unpaid wages, which happened often in arena football back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, they went to a dog that they just called Storm Dog. Some nicknames do not lend themselves to mascots. I was just thinking, the Golden State Warriors have tried some different mascots over the years.
Man, that one, I don't remember what the one where they had, the jerseys that they just discontinued that were, dark blue and mostly orange.
That kind of guy, with a shaved head and mm-hmm. a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Bad. Just bad. You can't
go
wrong with a dog. I think that's just it. If you don't know what you're going to do, just do a dog.
I thought to myself a few years ago, what is the Portland Trail Blazers mascot? It's a cat.
It's a cat.
Blaze the Trail Cat.
Yeah, some mysteries go unresolved.
It's a little easier to find the origins of some of these college mascots. Why does North Carolina... the Tar Heels have a ram? Why does Alabama the Crimson Tide have an elephant? But there's, good stories. Oftentimes they're connected to, in college mascots, they're connected to a newspaper story from, say, the 1920s or 1930s. I think with Alabama, the story that that they were like a herd of elephants or something like that. They were referred to in a story, and they just took on a life of its own.
Yeah.
Pro team mascots, especially when they're coming up with ones in this day and age, is usually a part of some focus group and all that and all that sort of thing. So it's interesting, but the Broncos have Miles, and then they have the little Junior Miles that walks.
I like Junior Miles a lot more.
I still say that Junior Miles should be called Kilometers, because about half the size of Miles, and Kilometers about 0.55 miles.
Well, exactly. I mean, Junior Miles kind of reminds me of Bucky the Bronco Huddles mascot, because it's very cute.
And they used to have, they've had Air Miles, like the inflatable.
Oh, yeah.
Like we've seen, Nebraska probably is the most famous inflatable mascot with, Big Red, and then Little Red is the inflatable version. There's been Air Miles, but now it's Miles and Junior Miles.
Well, I think...
Where's the mother?
I don't know.
Is she just out of the picture?
Do we need to have three mascots?
No. The Ravens have three mascots. Edgar, Allen, and Poe.
That's great. That's brilliant. I love that. I think we'll have to cut the podcast here. Looks like practice might be wrapping up soon. And that'll be our lighter side of sports segment. And next week we'll bring you some more news coming out of OTAs, as offensive line continues to kind of settle in the wake of Ryan Clady's injury, and both the offense, defense, and special teams adjust to new schemes for each of those new coordinators. All that, we'll have the reaction from everyone and other players, and we'll be back with you next week. Thanks for listening.